see anything you like?
Have you all got amnesia? They just cheated us!
They're coming. Get you, Barbara.
You've got a death curse.
It was a shark.
Little pig, let me come in.
Sometimes.
What was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil.
I'm just gonna bash your brains.
Welcome to the CineScare podcast. I am one of your hosts, Matt Speak.
And I am also one of your hosts, Joe Jans.
And with us as always is... Well, no. What am I doing? He's not here. Sorry. Yeah. We don't have the superfan with us here tonight. I don't know
but
what
I
I'm
do want to make an announcement.
Okay.
If I may. Today, someone was let go. And it's very important. He's very close to me. But we just could not tolerate his track record. And we had to separate him from the group. And some of you may be upset about this. Others may be thrilled. I personally am thanking God he was let go. And of course, I'm talking about Boston Bruins coach Jim Montgomery. Finally, they sent him packing. The Bruins deserve more than that this year. Damn it. I want to bring home that cup. So thank God. Hopefully Joe Sacco, the assistant coach, will step up and put the Bruins back up on top where they belong. I didn't mean to make this about hockey talk, but the Bruins are near and dear to my heart.
Yeah, that one was for all the hockey fans out there who are listening. Yes. Yes. the one other who might be out there, or Bruin fan.
Go Bruins! Wicked.
But we do have a special guest this week, and it's very exciting. And our pick this week that we watched was based on this guy coming to us. It's Andy Griskowiak. Did I just pronounce your name correctly? Because I forgot to ask you before.
No, you nailed it. Thank you so much for having me. You nailed the last name. Perfect pronunciation. Thank you guys so much.
Catholic name. Yeah.
Yeah.
Polish Catholic. Polish Catholic. It's classic Midwest Polish, you know.
Yeah.
It's the good stuff.
Yeah.
Like so most of the kids in my neighborhood.
All EACs and skis and you know.
Yeah. And he's another Midwestern guy from the Chicagoland area.
Mm-hmm.
And so that makes I guess Mark, Joe, you grew up in LaSalle's Chicagoland.
No, we are.
I mean, it's a little farther
an hour and
west.
A half west of Chicago, but
right.
I visited but you, there quite often because it was so close.
You had all the TV channels.
Oh yeah. WFLD used to watch, Son of Svengoolie every Saturday afternoon.
Then by proxy, you're in Chicago. If you got Svengoolie on your TV, then you're at least an Illinois resident in my book.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, certainly.
Yeah.
Even in the Quad Cities where I grew up, we got a few Chicago channels, especially on cable or whatever. I think there were a couple that even faintly were on our, regular channels, but
that's amazing.
Yeah.
I feel bad for anybody that didn't get WFLD Fox.
Yeah. It was just that Midwest programming block was just better. If you haven't experienced it, I'm sorry. Apologies. The genuine anxiety, like a Svengoolie like programming block would give me, is something special. Just the aesthetic, the whole thing.
Yeah, it was the best. And there was
it
one channel.
My childhood.
Very much so. Yes. Yes. Yeah. And there was one channel, Channel 44, out of Chicago. I don't remember what that was. It wasn't WGN, but they were the ones that played the White Sox when we were growing up rather than the Cubs. WGN had the Cubs and Channel 44 had the White Sox, and they had a Saturday afternoon or late night, maybe. I can't remember what time it came on. Might have been both, actually. They might have done a replay, but they had one called the Monster Rally Movie, and their host was very Svengoolie like.
Now, here, Matt probably wouldn't have had this, but Andy, I know you would have.
Okay.
I used to grow up listening to Larry Lujack on WLS AM 89.
No, I'm not familiar with this.
Really? Oh my God, that was voice of my childhood. WLS out of Chicago, AM 89, Larry Lujack in the morning. Actually, if you ever watch Ferris Bueller's Day Off, at the beginning of the very beginning of the movie, they're still doing the establishing shot outside of the house, and you can hear like his morning alarm going off and the radio coming on, and that's Larry Lujack.
Oh my God, I had no idea. That's amazing.
Yeah,
that's lovely. I was like Man Cow, embarrassingly enough, Eric and Kathy in the Mornings. A lot of drama there. Steve Dahl. Late stage Steve Dahl, but definitely.
Yep. Yeah.
Nice.
This is cool. I just want to name Midwestern staples and icons. Yeah, exactly.
Midwestern pop culture quiz.
Exactly.
Go.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Exactly. Rafi Baseball. Okay.
Well, Joe, what have you watched recently? Have you watched anything new?
I watched two things. One is horror related. The other one is horrible. I actually, the only thing worth mentioning was Heretic. Saw that in the theaters the day it came out.
Good one.
I will admit it is fighting a really good fight, much, much better than Tyson Paul, for my number one spot of the year so far.
Wow.
It was, I dare say, magical to watch this film. I will say Hugh Grant is so impressive. He's so endearing and psychotic at the same time. I hope he gets some sort of nod, some sort of notification for this. It was tremendous. And I'm just realizing now Topher Grace was in this film.
Wow.
Oh, right. He was the other guy. Yeah, Elder Kennedy? The preacher or whatever, right?
Yeah, I had no idea that was Topher Grace.
Yeah.
Thank God for IMDb. But I loved it. It was very, very suspenseful throughout. It held my interest from beginning to end. I loved it. The thing that hit me the hardest to my heart was the music and the music comparisons that he makes throughout the film about iterations and how they relate to religion. That just, I had never thought about that, but it hit the nail on the head. And if for those of you who are big music fanatics, if you see this film, please stick around to the end and listen to the song in the credits. It's an earwig. It will drive you nuts because it sounds like one thing and it's not. Like, basically, when that song started up, I would have bet money. I would have bet my children that it was Mazzy Star. And it's Knocking on Heaven's Door.
Oh.
And I would play it in the car. I would play the Mazzy Star song, Fade Into You.
Mm-hmm.
I was playing that in the car on the way home because I couldn't get this out of my head. And then I downloaded the Knocking on Heaven's Door version. And you can literally just sing Mazzy Star over the top of this. It was driving me nuts. Yeah. So it's note for note. But the film itself, other than the music choices, were just top notch. I absolutely love this film. I can't wait for it to come to digital.
Yeah, I really liked it too. I gave it 4 cuts. I don't think it's certainly not vying for probably even my top 5, but it's definitely going to be in my top 10, I would imagine, unless this year ends up with a whole bunch of stuff that that cuts in there, but it's in the mix certainly for my top 10 for sure. And I thought Hugh Grant was terrific. I thought it works really well as a cat and mouse, but it also had some interesting things to say about religion without getting too hitting you over the head with it. And I thought I just thought the whole conversation they had was handled really well. And that the girls, I like that the girls were both had their own distinct personalities and that they weren't necessarily buying everything that he had to say. It's not like they, I think a lot of movies might have made it sound like he was, revealing a bunch of information that they had never heard before, and I like that they were calling him on his BS, or at least calling him on whatever it was that he was saying that, you know, it wasn't as profound and maybe as he thought it was. And I thought that was an interesting dynamic, but then he also made some very good points about religion as well and Christianity and that, you know, it was an interesting back and forth without it kind of being overboard or taking over. And that's a tough, you know, it's a tough philosophical thing to do in a movie with your dialogue. And if you're not able to do it in a really, really effective way, it can kind of be deadly. You can either sound like you think you know more than you do, or it can sound disingenuous. But I thought the way they did it was really well done. And I thought that everything unfolded really well. So I really did. I liked this one a lot. Yeah. Andy, did you see this one as well, or have you watched Heretic yet?
I have not seen Heretic yet, but yeah. I do have a quick story, if I may. Like 6 years ago, just because the guys who made that movie and have made incredible horror films, Beck and Woods are the duo. And 6 years ago, I was working for this men's retailer called Bonobos. It was like a men's clothing store in the Century City Mall here in L.A. And guy came in and seemed really flustered, and it was Scott Beck, who is one of the two that made this movie. I didn't know it at the time. And he was all nervous because he was going to South by Southwest for the premiere of A Quiet Place, which they had written screenplay for. And long story short, I was able to hook him up with a suit like the day before he had to leave, that just like last minute was able to get him something. And so when I left that job, I stole his email address and emailed him and was kind of like, hey, I'm going to try to be a screenwriter. This is really, really inappropriate. And those guys have been so generous with their knowledge and just like they were the first people to ever be like, yeah, here's real logical steps as to like what you should do to try to get your work read. I'm always rooting for them, even though I haven't gotten a chance to see it, like always totally rooting for them. Solid guys. Completely generous with their knowledge.
Yeah, they actually went to my high school, Bettendorf High School in Iowa.
They're from Davenport, yeah. Quad yeah. City area. Bettendorf, yeah. Actually. Yeah,
Bettendorf, which is it's Quad City area, but I lived in Bettendorf. I went to the high school. They went to the same high school as me. And so, you know, it's pretty cool that they've had this kind of success. So,
yeah.
Of course, they were decades after me, but or at least a couple decades.
Andy, if you're ever back home in the Midwest and looking to take a car trip, come to downtown Davenport. They were responsible for building a movie theater downtown along the river called the Last Picture House, which they do a lot of screenings and stuff down here, and it's fantastic. It's phenomenal. It's a great space.
Yeah, I would love to, if I'm ever around, I'll hit you up. I would love to visit that theater.
Sure.
Yeah, I just love what they're doing about with the theater experience, and I think, you know, with me just being like some kid who was like, hey, I'm going to steal your email, which is totally uncool, with that and them just bringing like a picture house to the Midwest where as you guys know, it's not right in your front yard as much as it is in LA. So like any dudes who are like working towards going like, hey, film nerds, this is a place for you. This is where you kind of can come get educated. Yeah. Like two thumbs up. I will always root for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Joe, what else have you watched?
The only other thing I saw was that Tom Hanks movie here in the theaters. The one that's like all done in AI.
Oh,
it's him and Robin Wright, you know.
Yeah,
it was a hot mess. My wife wanted to see it, you know, she was hoping for like a rom-com, and so I'm like, all right, fine, because nowadays they're few and far between. If you look at all the movies that are out nowadays in the theaters, most of them are horror, which is great for me and it's terrible for my rom-com loving wife. So we had high hopes because, you know, it's Tom Hanks and Robin Wright. And this should be a no-brainer, knock it out of the park. It's just so bad from beginning to end.
You know, there hasn't been a good smart rom-com in a while, though. You know, if somebody pulled out a When Harry Met Sally right now, I have a feeling it would go through the roof because there's a market for it. There has to be. There has to be still people want to see rom-coms. And there aren't any. It's all action, horror, maybe drama or whatever, but there, you know, there needs to be, and or if there are rom-coms, they're kind of dumb, you know,
they're
ones
terrible.
Or whatever.
They're
it's
like
not
right off the Hallmark Channel.
Yeah. If somebody could tap into a real adult, smart rom-com.
Yeah. There we there go. Right. Maybe. That's
yeah. There you go.
There's the market. Yeah. I love the rom-com. I think the rom-com, yeah, like you guys say, it's dead. And when a serviceable one comes about, everyone loses their minds. Right. Yeah. And it's like, we don't know what to do with it. Like there was one, I think like 7 or 8 years ago called Set It Up that was like dumped right on Netflix, but was like actually really charming and fun and good. Yeah. But it's just like, I don't know. I don't know where we're at. We don't know what to do with a movie like that anymore.
Yeah. No, but it's going to take somebody doing one that just blows up, and then all of a sudden you're gonna have a million of them. But
there will be there'll be 300 right after it next week. Yeah.
So careful what you wish for.
Yeah. So other than that, I haven't really watched much. I'm trying to recover from the Halloween season, and trying to, you know, it's hockey season, so that's what I'm spending a lot of time watching. So
excellent. Andy, is there anything recently that you've watched that you want to talk about? Yeah, or that you've
totally. I quite dug VHS Beyond. I'm a big anthology horror guy, so that's just annual viewing for me. I watch the VHS franchise like I watch a sports team, or like one would watch a sports team. And so I just like always have a blast watching those. In a Violent Nature, I finally got around to watching. I'm very particular about hype surrounding movies. So like when a movie's released and like it just feels like everything's skewing one way or skewing, and I like the hype to kind of die down, and then I'll watch it and make up my mind for myself. Really, really dug In a Violent Nature. I think it was just like I've said it before, but like I don't think a movie needs to completely reinvent the wheel. I think it's fun to just talk about how great the wheel is, and In a Violent Nature just felt like a very kind of imperfect. I don't know that I would be like 5 stars, but just really fun and exciting. And then just another one I want to mention really quick, because just all over the place. Specifically, I just watched on Hulu, it's called Mr. Crockett, and then yeah, and then I just also watched last week, not totally a horror movie, but I saw The TV Glow, which both just particularly tapped into this like tangible, like visceral 90s television, like children's television fear, like really, really well. This sort of like analog horror meets like practical monster effects. Mm-hmm. And it just, that scratches a real nice part of my brain. So both very completely different movies. Had horror wise had a blast with Mr. Crockett. Thought it was really cool that Hulu, that, you know, that started as like a short for Huluween, and then they expanded it into a feature with the same filmmaker. So I dug seeing them like endorse the same guy, and it was really fun. Really liked it.
Yeah.
The character Mr. Crockett was so psychotic.
Yeah, just, and it was
terrifying.
So
I loved him. Yeah.
Yeah, and I thought it just, I hate to be like, maybe it's the Midwest, but just like that public access kind of kids show feel. Like, I've seen the sincere version of that show, you know, and it's also kind of creepy. And so I really enjoyed that one.
Yeah, and I saw the TV Glow had that similar kind of, I haven't seen Mr. Crockett, but I've heard about it. And it also sounds very similar to the first, I think it was the first season of Channel Zero. I don't know if you guys have watched that, but the first season of Channel Zero is basically centered around a children's TV show that everyone kind of remembers and then kind of doesn't. And there's something going on with it. It's pretty interesting season, but I did watch, let's see. I watched Azrael. Joe, you didn't watch Azrael?
I did.
With Samara Weaving.
Yes, I did. The no talking one.
Yeah,
yes. Yeah. I did. It seemed like a really, really good knock it out of the park episode of The Walking Dead.
Yeah, kinda. But I really liked it. This one is probably up there vying in my top 10 as well. I really enjoyed it a lot, and I thought Samara Weaving is fantastic. And I thought it was just visceral action. One thing after the next. I thought it was really interesting. And I watched Black Cab, which I know, Joe, you watched that one too. Where are my notes?
I was the one that told you to watch that.
That's why you need a Letterboxd. You need Letterboxd. But Black Cab, I liked it. It's definitely, it's a ghost kind of thing. So I'm already on board with it. It kind of meanders a bit, and I don't think it's not great, but it's definitely entertaining. And I thought it had some ghost creepiness, and I really dug the ending. Actually, I liked the way where it ended and how it ended. It took some turns. I know it's a single location basically because they're in a cab through pretty much most of the film. There's a couple diversions that they do, but it's mostly in this guy's cab. And there were a couple things involved with that that I thought were, you know, hit and miss. But generally speaking, I thought it was very entertaining. I enjoyed it. So it's not, you know, don't go into it. If you go into it expecting, you know, something unbelievable, I don't know if you'll care for it that much. But if you go into it just expecting and especially if you're into ghost stories and a British ghost story, especially, I think you'll dig it.
See, and I think I would have liked it more if they had turned down the ghost element. Matt and I are polar opposites. If they had turned down the ghost element and turned up more of the psychotic taking you hostage aspect.
I thought that part didn't work as well. personally, I mean, I like that kind of movie too.
Matt, you got chocolate in my peanut butter.
I like that kind of movie too, but I just didn't think it worked as well as the ghost element of it. But and I loved the outdoor scenery. I thought it was pretty atmospheric for having it be inside a cab for, you know, at least 75% of its run, if not more.
Did I watch anything else, Matt?
Well, yeah, let me check and see if you watched anything else, Joe. My old age. Yeah, I don't think so, Joe. I don't think you watched anything else. I think it's pretty much all. Yeah. And then I do want to say once again that I am still watching From, and this season, it's. I think the show is definitely interesting and good to watch, but there are a lot of episodes that feel kind of filler, especially now as we're getting in past the second half of the season. There's sometimes you want it to do more, but I'm still enjoying it, and I think it's definitely worth checking out. So we'll see. It's still got, I think it's got a couple more episodes left, maybe. I'm not sure of this season. And I have not heard whether they're renewing it. So it would really be a kick in the pants if they don't renew it for a fourth season, because there's a lot of things set up in this. And that's part of the problem, actually, is that I'd like to see them starting to progress a little bit more with the show. But when it comes to the horror and what creates the horror of this show, the creatures that are in it, it's very effective. And I think that the creatures that they have in this are really, really well done. So some of the mysteries, I feel sometimes there's some things that they introduce and then don't pursue. And then there are a few things from a couple seasons ago that just kind of got dropped, and I'm not sure what's happening with it and if they have a plan. So that's part of the problem, is it's one of those shows where I don't know if they have a plan or not. Like I am a little worried about that, or if they're just going with a stream of consciousness kind of thing. I'm not sure, but I am enjoying the ride. And if the destination isn't what I want it to be, you know, it reminds me of the TV show Lost. The ride was great, and then when you got to your destination, it was kind of like meh, you know. So I'm hoping they have a better destination for this, but so far it's interesting. It's a good show. And I've heard a couple other shows out there, but we have, Joe, did you watch the Creep Tapes yet?
No, I have not. That okay. I know I didn't watch.
Okay, good. We did watch they've released the first two episodes. It's, if you are not familiar, it's Creep, you know, was the show, or the movie. I'm blanking on the guy that
I'm on it.
What's his name? Creep.
Duplass, the guy who
oh, yeah, Mark Duplass. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Duplass brothers really do it. And so this they have a Creep 1, there's Creep 2, and now there's a series where each episode, it's about a half hour long each episode, and it apparently is going to be, you know, cuz this guy, if you remember in the movie, he had all these people who were videographers or whatever come out and he basically had them videotape their own death as he killed them. And so if at one point they showed in the movie that he had tons of videotapes of all these with people's names on them, obviously people who had died. And so I think each episode is a new person who came to his place or that he met someplace and recorded them dying. So it's exactly that. So I think it's definitely worth checking out. So I think that's all I watched except for our pick of the week. So here we go. Oh, why is it not working? There we go. Our little sound cue. So this week we have Andy Greshkoviak is here, and we are.
Let me do the intro. Let me do
yeah,
the back,
go ahead.
Background
yeah,
story.
Go ahead, Joe. There you
so,
go.
So if I remember how everything went prior, Mark, his guest, like he normally does, and he had a table of people that were discussing movies, and Mark's ears perked up. And as we all know, Mark loves to interject himself into other people's conversations, and they were discussing horror movies. And he's like, oh, I know a lot about horror movies. And they asked, have you ever seen this movie called Black Friday? He says, well, of course I have, because I'm on this podcast called Cinescare, and we talk about horror films. And they said, oh, our son wrote that. He's like, oh, my God, that's amazing. And that's how connections are made, folks. At least that's how they're made in the Midwest. So lo and behold, we got Andy got our information. We got mm-hmm. in touch with Andy, and this is Kismet. So, Andy, welcome to Cinescare, and we'd like to know more about you and the movie you made and the movie you're making, if we can talk about that.
Great. Yeah. Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. How did you get this script made, and how did it
Who
all happen?
Did you sell a suit to
yeah.
get it made?
Perfect. Yeah, because it's all everything connects back to retail for me. I'm from Illinois originally, from a northwest suburb of Chicago called Bloomingdale. I went to DePaul's film school for screenwriting. So I graduated in 2014. And while I was there, I worked odd retail jobs throughout my 4 years. And my first one was I worked seasonal, specifically Black Friday at Toys R Us. And when I then got into the screenwriting program and had started writing scripts, a tip that really kind of stuck with me was to go with what you know, right? Like what could you write a story about that you know all the bells and whistles, right? And all I really knew at that time when I was 19 was working, being a germaphobe in a toy store. That was it. That's all I knew how to do. And so then I kind of, zombies in a toy store being a germaphobe, like all connected. And I wrote it as a thesis project to graduate, and that script was really bad. And I worked on it for like 10 years, just always kind of like going back, rewriting it, all while working retail, meeting different people, until different stages of development with different people at different times who were interested in script. But was always changing it, you know, it to be the version that you eventually saw, and then met the director Casey through a website called Virtual Pitch Fest, where you could just kind of, you could pitch queries out to a bunch of different people. So it's representatives from management companies, directors, producers, and Casey read the script and was the first person who was like, oh, I think we could do this. I think we could make this movie. He really connected with it. That was really funny. And then we just started kind of chugging along with it. And then the pandemic started, and it was like, we were either going to go full steam ahead and like film this movie in lockdown with like strict conditions, or walk away from it, call it a day. And we ended up going through with production and making it. And so that's in short, how Black Friday came to be over the course of 10 years. And then I could pause there and we could talk about it before I tell you about anything else I've been up to.
Okay. Yeah. Wonderful. Yeah. I know I had, my first question is, did you write the part of, what was his name? Jonathan. Did you write the part of Jonathan with Bruce Campbell in mind? Because he is absolutely perfect in this movie.
I can't believe, like, no. First, so I didn't, because I never thought it would get made. So I wrote Jonathan, like, I wrote it based on my boss at Toys R Us, and his whole thing was like, if we were closing on a Friday night and closed was like 11, like, that's the time I was getting out. Like, he was the guy that would kind of always be like, we could just hang out for like 90 minutes. Just like, after, if you guys want to just chill, like, you know, I have the keys. Yeah. And I was like, dude, I'm like tired. And so that's kind of where that came from. What Bruce did add to it, though, is that until he came on board, Jonathan was a heel the whole time. Just an asshole. Always, you know, early in the movie, he totally bails on Ken in a fight. And then, you know, Ivana punches him square in the nose. And that was his character. He was screwing over the team up until the last minute, up until he met like a really grisly demise. And then we were doing a read through on Zoom, and Bruce ad-libbed. Oh, he said something. They're doing like the scene where they're all eating turkey, and he ad-libs. Okay, well, at least you were invited to a Thanksgiving. And like, it broke my heart. And I was like, oh no, we're going to feel for this. Let's go feel for him. What's his deal? Why is he like this? And so, like, a ton of credit to Bruce, who was the guy who kind of came in and was like, oh, I think we can make him, like, instead of being an antagonist, what if he just was like, too lame, like just the lamest dude in the world, and kind of hack. And yeah, I so endlessly grateful to what he brought to that character, but never in a million years did I think he would want to be involved with it.
Well, it's kind of counter to his type. Usually he's kind of the almost cartoonish hero type, and this was, you know, he's not in this. He's you know, the way he dresses is, you know, he is kind of a guy who's kind of lame, you know.
Yeah.
You know, the big sweater and the bow tie, and then just, you know, just his manner, his, you know, I thought it was, it, you can definitely recognize him, but I think it, to me, it was like, it didn't look like Bruce Campbell at times. Like, you know, he really performed that part really well, I thought.
He was a lot.
Yeah, I was really, really. Yeah, yeah, and I just thought he brought a weird and strange depth I didn't think we were going to find in Jonathan, and the just a funny onset story. The only thing I saw when he came to Massachusetts to film, I saw that he grew out the mustache, and I thought it was so cool. I was like, oh my God. And then I came to set, and I was just wearing a sweater and a t-shirt, and somebody came up to me, and they were like, oh my God, your sweater. And I said, what? And they're like, you're wearing the same lame ass sweater Jonathan wears. Did you get it for the movie? And I was just wearing that cardigan. I just had it on. Yes, and I was like, oh no. Yeah. Oh, I knew. Yeah, of course. But yeah, no, Bruce is radical. That guy rules.
Yeah. He's got a very, normally you see Bruce Campbell and he's a leader. He's a commander. And so he's still adaptable in this role. It's very believable. But the more you learn about him, that's the, like, he wanted this job because he's normally a loser, which I loved, because that way he's sort of got this role of power over other people, which he normally otherwise would never have. But he's still so endearing. He's such a likable character.
There's a couple. It's really, really interesting because when the movie came out, we weren't sharing this a ton because we don't want to discourage people. And there are a ton of Evil Dead fans out there, rightfully so. But Bruce, when he came onto this project, was like strictly like, I don't want to wink at S-Mart. I don't want to do any Ash stuff. Like, I don't want to be that character in that. Like, I don't want to be the hero. I don't want to be this sort of proxy for an old man Ash movie. Like, no, I am a loser. And so that I was apologies to people. Cause I get it. Old man Ash sounds cool as hell, but not in We Love Toys.
There was one instance where I thought maybe the first time I saw this, you were going to go down that road with the nods to Ash, is when they're in the break room. I think it's before they have their Thanksgiving dinner. And maybe it was afterwards. Marnie, I believe, crushes, is it Mel? Emmett, sorry. Crushes Emmett's
head. Emmett, yeah.
And in the middle of it, Bruce Campbell says, they're never really dead.
Yeah.
But it came back later on, tied it all in. I'm like, okay, they're not trying to make a nod to Ash anywhere. So kudos.
Right. And it's funny because a lot of people have come to me with that line and they were like, you got one in. Completely coincidentally, the Chucky clip, complete, yeah, wink to Devin was on Chucky. We're like, wink, yeah. I'll give you that absolutely. But yeah, the Evil Dead stuff. I think Devin and Bruce, I think there's a shot where they clasp hands, or at least maybe on set, we got a scene where they grab the hands that each have severed on camera. And I remember thinking that was very cool. Yeah. But yeah, otherwise, completely around it. Will say, and I'm not trying to brag or whatever, I would be sitting on set. It was COVID. It was, so everybody was 6 feet apart. And Bruce Campbell would be sitting at his chair. He's reading a Kindle. And he would put it down every once in a while and just say, do you want to hear a story about making Evil Dead? And I was like, is this like did I make a wish on a shooting star or something? Like, what happened? That was always cool. And it was cool because it was a movie that truly felt like we were making a movie about the end of the world during the end of the world. It was just,
yeah.
And he is somebody who has made an iconic film franchise completely against the odds. Yeah. And so if anybody could tell you like, no, you know, these things work when it seems like the world is kind of working against you, these things will work out. And it's like to have that guy on your team kind of rooting for the movie. Yeah. I'll never be able to thank that guy enough.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty cool. Cause it's always nice when somebody like that is aware of their celebrity and is willing to, they know people want to hear about it. You know what I mean? Like it would be very easy for him to say, oh, I don't want to talk about Evil Dead. Everybody asked me about that. But he is aware of the fact that everyone on that set is probably like, oh, I'd love to hear about Evil Dead. You know, I'd love to hear about Ash and all that stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, and it was a set of a bunch. No, I was just going to say it was a set of a bunch of, we were all timid nerds. So for him to offer that, those stories up, because we were all too afraid to ask, he was the cool guy. Yeah. So it was very cool.
And I don't want that haven't seen this to think that it's all about Bruce Campbell, because it's not. The rest of the cast is spectacular. I will admit, I had no idea, I had seen none of these people in anything else prior, but I thought their characters, their acting ability was spot on, particularly Steven Peck as Brian. I absolutely loved him in that spot because I have worked for and with guys that are just like that. Plays a tremendous villain in this film.
Steven's great. Like so I wrote Brian as like a Pete Davidson type, like 7 years ago, I think I say in the script. So like, you know, lanky, snot nose, maybe kind of even like, you know, the brown noser who might be getting high on his breaks. Kind of, there's a character named Bircher who gets killed outside while smoking a cigarette in the first act of the movie. And the original Brian was kind of closer to that, right? And like Jay from Jay and Silent Bob. And we got Steven's audition and it was way more flamboyant, way more dedicated to the character. And before we even did costuming or anything, Steven came to me and was like, I firmly believe Brian would match their glasses and their makeup to their ensemble. They would do what they could to be the biggest kiss ass of all, and just brought this like energy that I never could have. And like Steven is such a talented performer and like was going toe to toe with Bruce Campbell, and it was Steven's first movie. And I just, yeah, I really, everybody else in that ensemble cast who I love has been working in film since they were like 11 years old. Devin, Ryan Lee, Ivana. And then, so you have this ensemble of seasoned horror veterans. And then Steven, who not only manages to keep up with all of them, but in my opinion, is the shining attribute. Like that's our secret weapon. That's, I couldn't have written that. What Steven brought to the table.
And there's one other hidden gem of your cast that I didn't realize until I looked it up on IMDb.
Yeah.
Dower Dennis.
It was, yes.
Seth Green.
Yeah. Seth Green. Yeah. One of my,
I have to say Dower Dennis is awesome.
One of my notes is I want a Dower Dennis bear for Christmas.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah. So yeah. Funny. So funny.
It was great. So originally in the script, it was just a dancing bear named Teddy Joey. My brother's name is Joe. And so it was named after my brother. It was kind of like a dancing little hip hop bear. And then Casey and I, in the year of development that we spent before, when he read the script and then before we started shooting, we just kind of thought it was really funny. Like Grumpy Cat was really funny. Yeah. And just that like kids' toys were like, look, it's an animal with seasonal depression. And we were just like, weird. Like it's so weird. And so then we just kind of started doing Dower Dennis. And then at some point, Seth Green, so Seth and Casey are tight. They've worked together on a couple things before. And then kind of unrelated, Devin got involved with the movie. And so then we were like connecting the dots and the Idle Hands connection. We were like, oh, this would be really funny. And then at some point we came up with the idea that we wouldn't write any dialogue for Dower Dennis, that Seth Green was just going to go into a booth and record it from his interpretation was the actor who is recording the voice, like the voice box for Dower Dennis's wife actually left him last week. And so just like I have listened to, if we ever got like a proper, like we have a DVD and it's lovely, but if we ever got like a reissuing or whatever, I would, if we could ever get away to get those, just the raw Dower Dennis footage, the raw dialogue, because it's great. Yeah. That is such a fun Easter egg that still a lot of people don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I tell you, if you could ever make that Dower Dennis, like for real, you'd make
millions.
Oh,
every divorced dad would have one.
I would,
and everyone would finally know what to get that divorced dad to cheer him up.
Right. Right. And I love the idea that he's not going to make anything better. He's just another depressed guy.
Yeah. It's misery.
Yeah. Yeah, I had my way, Dower Dennis would be in homes across this nation.
It was fantastic. Yeah.
Matching people's depressive episodes.
Yeah, with Seth Green's voice, it's got to be. I honestly, you're talking about, Bruce Campbell telling stories about Evil Dead. I'd want to hear Seth Green's story about stories about Buffy and Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I would love to hear about that. I
will say, and if I'm telling too many tangents about being on set or whatever, please. But on the last day, so we really were kind of kept in different camps and different groups. And I will admittedly say, like on set, I was the closest with Ryan Lee, Stephen Peck, Ivana Baccaro. I think because we were all just similar in age, and it was like the only social interaction we had. Devin kept his trailer, Bruce here and there, but mostly in his trailer. So on the very last day, we shot the scene where Devin picks Chris up and he's getting in the car. And so I had a second and we wanted to do a bit where he was kind of calling out to Chris when he's running out to the car. He wanted to call out to Chris as if he was announcing a boxer. So he's like, I think it'd be funny to be like, coming out, weighing it, whatever. So we're sitting in this dining room across from each other. And I was given the opportunity, because it was just me and Devin, to, on the last day of filming, just like sincerely tell him that my dad showed me Idle Hands when I was like 7 or 6, which is way too young if you've seen that movie. But it was like the first movie that ever showed me that like a movie could be like very funny and very creepy and kind of it was very different than a lot of the horror movies out at that time, and inspired this love of horror comedy in me, and just how weirdly full circle it felt for me. And I understood that a lot of people, it meant a lot to me to work with Bruce Campbell, but like it was the strangest full circle thing, and just to be like to be able to thank him to be a part of this meant a lot.
Yeah, that's fantastic. It's great when that happens.
Yeah.
And this movie to me felt a lot like it was very much a throwback to me. This would have fit in very well with movies that came out in the 80s. Well, for one thing, Intruder, which was Bruce Campbell, I believe he was in Intruder, right? And then that single location is fantastic as well. You know, basically single location once we get into the story, and it does infuse comedy with horror, some campiness and all that stuff, which is kind of missing from horror nowadays. And horror has become very serious, which is fine with me, but it, you know, at the same time, there's also kind of missing the fun sometimes. And there was a lot of fun to be had in this movie. And it did, it brought back, you know, the feeling of having a really good B movie, basically a very well done B movie. And those are very few and far between nowadays. You don't see a lot of them. Yeah. B plus yeah. movie. Yeah.
There we go. Oh my gosh.
But yeah, you just don't see them that often anymore. The movies that are good midnight movies and would be a lot of fun to have with a crowd of people to watch, you know, and this yeah. fits in that mold, I believe.
And I would so. Be
thank you. Miss... Yeah. When we were,
oh, go ahead.
Oh no, I just was going to mention that when we made it, me and Casey said we wanted to make a movie that you'd find at Blockbuster. We wanted to make a movie that like yeah. you and your buddies would watch on a VCR that was safe scary, where it's like, oh, it's pretty fun and it's easy to watch, but also you might see something that like viscerally like that grandma monster. You might see something that changes you forever, but like it's yeah. good sleepover fun. With just yeah, I just the movies that inspire Alien was a big one. Weirdly, yeah. I just where that single location and the kind of motley crew. That's why I really love the setting of a job of a part time or a retail job, because it's like this is just like your motley crew. These aren't friends. You don't love these people. If given the choice, if you're not being paid, you wouldn't be spending time with them. And I just like that's I miss that in horror, and I miss bickering in horror. One of my yeah. favorite, one of my favorites is Your Next, the home invasion movie, just cause it's a family who's being picked off one by one and they can't stop bickering. And I just yeah. love that yeah. very much. So I'm sorry. I went on another tangent.
No, it's fine.
I do want to point out one of my favorite little bits that you had in this is when the doors finally open for Black Friday, the first person through is the old woman on the motorized cart. Which I appreciate so much, having worked Black yeah. Friday retail myself at one point. But I would be remiss if yeah. I did not compliment also the score to this film, which is fantastic. And it is, mm-hmm. it's all kicked off with Have I Got a Gift for You by Patrick Stump, which at the first time I had ever heard that, I would have bet money that was a Sinatra song. It's fantastic.
Yeah,
it's great. The first time I saw the movie with that in it, so the first like six rounds of the movie I saw, I think Casey had, because they just put filler scores in it. So for a minute there was the Predator score in a couple scenes, and then It Follows was in a few, you know. And so then the first time I saw it with Have I Got a Gift for You in it, I just said to Casey, I was like, fuck, dude, we gotta get a song that sounds like that for our movie. Yeah. Like, if we could get however close we could get to that song. And he's like, no, that's ours. And like, that, I'm a Midwestern kid. Fall Out Boy is, I was raised on Fall Out Boy. So to work with Patrick Stump is just surreal. And all the score for the whole movie, I love very much. But yeah, it was just such a huge and fun moment. And like, to have a song like that in our movie that people have messaged me separate from the movie, and they've just discovered it on whatever streaming app, and they're like, I had no idea that it kind of traced back to Black Friday. I very much enjoy that song. It's very special.
Yeah, very good.
So Matt, unless you had something else to nod off about Black Friday, I'd love to hear about your other upcoming projects.
Yeah. Yeah. So rolling off of Black Friday, I on the set. So, you know, the whole thing around Black Friday, I wrote that movie initially thinking that when I was 19, the scariest thing I could think of was being stuck in like a life or death situation with my coworkers who ranged in it. Some of them were 50 years older than me. I don't know what we would do. I didn't trust any of them. And they, you know, kind of that weird understanding where you're kind of like, are we friends or are we work friends, right? That's what that movie came out of. So on set, I started thinking, okay, what's the next scariest thing I could think of? Like what really genuinely scares me? And what I was able to think of was being 12. I think I want to do a horror movie about adolescence, growing up, going through puberty. And so on set, I said to Warner, the producer of Black Friday, Warner Davis. He was like, so what are you doing next? I said, well, I got this idea. And so the basic pitch was, I said, you know how in like most Friday the 13th movies, Jason's picking off people on vacation near Crystal Lake or the counselors after summer camp has ended or before it starts or the locals. You know, how come we never really get to see him picking off the kids a lot. Like why it would be cool. Why is camp never fully in session and Jason's just picking the kids off? And he was like, cause you can't make that movie. And I said, okay, if I could write that script and you like it, can we do it? And he said, yeah. And so then 2 months later, I sent him the first draft of it and he called me to call dibs on it. He was like, okay, we're doing it. So that's it. It's a horror movie about growing up and kind of that first time maybe you're given the keys to your life a little bit, right? When you're like 12 years old, maybe getting sent to summer camp. That's your first taste of freedom and social kind of dexterity, getting to make your first friends on your own. And it's just such a – just that half of the story is such a weird and scary and vulnerable thing to me that I'm like, man, if you threw a scary campfire story slasher in there – It gave me so much anxiety writing it. So I'm very excited by what has come up. Now the project is called Marshmallow. They filmed it. So that script was made through the writer's strike. So I wasn't on set for it at all. So that was like, literally I handed my child off to summer camp. I gave them my script and I was like, have fun. And then they came back to me. They came back with a movie and it's very wonderful. It stars Corbin Burnson, Georgia Wiggum, Alicia Reiner. And yeah, it's same thing. Kind of this one, if Black Friday was like a sleepover blockbuster horror movie, this is like my throwback Amblin horror movie. And where it's like I said, it's just that it's, I don't know why. I think because when I was 12, I was the most scared I've ever been. Fingers crossed. So I think like, especially with Black Friday and with Marshmallow, I'm thinking about that kid a lot. And I'm like, man, what would really, really freak him out? And so I'm bullying myself, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that is 25. That'll come out. I don't know exactly when yet, but early 25.
Wow, that's fantastic.
So it's already like filmed. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Just like cut
yeah.
up right now.
Yeah, that's I haven't seen the final cut, but I got to see a lot. I worked with a lot of the same people. So Danny Del Purgatorio, Daniel Del Purgatorio, if any listener wants to Google him, has some outstanding horror shorts online available on Vimeo and YouTube. He worked on Black Friday. He was in effects on Black Friday. Warner, the producer, produced both Black Friday and Marshmallow, and there was a lot of shared DNA there. So it's really fun to get to see those people again and to kind of keep it. Oh, my God. And Robert Kurtzman designed all of the monsters for Black Friday, and he has done all the makeup effects, and the big bad are the doctor is this slasher figure who haunts this camp. And that was all Bob Kurtzman. I'm gonna deviate really quick because Tusk by Kevin Smith, that walrus suit scared. That's I saw it opening weekend, so I was the guy. The movie made like $7 with me. I saw it opening weekend, and just to kind of see because I saw what it was about, the walrus suit, and I followed the whole campaign, and I just was like, can he pull it off? Right? Because he's gonna make the walrus suit look scary, and man, that first reveal shot. I want that gift back. That scare, that fear I felt, that first, that rack focus shot and screaming. And so that he was my big, if you were like, when you were saying earlier, like, did you picture anybody doing like Bruce Campbell as Jonathan when you were writing it? Like my pipe dream writing the script was Bob Kurtzman making the monsters. Cause I was like, if he could do the scary walrus, I have no doubt about the vulture monster. I have no doubt about the grandma or anything. And I think I think you see it. That guy is out of control. He is so good at what he does. And yeah, just a living legend.
I was very impressed with the creature design that you had in Black Friday. One of my notes is it's very reminiscent of The Thing is what I was getting out of it.
100%. So that's when I pitched it to Casey. That's what I said. I said, you know, in the thing, they're dealing with this fast evolving alien parasite and they're in a lab. So they've got like buzz saws and blow torches. Imagine that scenario at a retail job. And yeah, he loved it. Like, it was just, it was that, like, imagine instead of blow torches, you had a Nerf gun and that was like your best bet. Yeah. Like that. Yeah. It, the thing is absolutely insane thing. That's another one that really just freaks me out because it's, the thing is a work environment. That's a lab. It's these are coworkers. They're not friends, and it becomes this thing where you're kind of like, that's where where Brian has bitten Ken. That comes, you know, that inspiration comes from a thing where it's kind of like, oh, I guess we don't really truly know each other that well, right? I guess I knew you were an asshole. I didn't know you were a piece of shit, yeah, right? I'm sorry, I've cursed a couple times on this podcast. I'm sorry.
No, it's totally fine. Yeah,
okay, I didn't ask up top, but yeah, no. So yeah, so I forget, I lost track, but Bob Kurtzman rules practical effects forever.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. I did want to talk to you. What is your just a touch a little bit on what is your process in writing? How do you go about? Do you do a lot of I guess, like, you know, obviously it starts with an idea.
Yeah.
But then how do you develop that? Do you do a lot of outlining, or do you just sit down and fly by the seat of your pants? What is your process?
So a lot of outlining. It's not traditional outlining. You know, I know a lot of people, my brother's a television writer, and he'll outline, he's in Final Draft. He's got all the boards and everything. I'm a big journaler. Which is fun because, like, so I think it's downstairs right now, but I have a journal from 2015 where I've written out my ideas for what would become the version you've seen of Black Friday, right? And so so it's just that. And I'm not just like, this isn't just even the storyline. Like, I get the log line, the plot, and then I'm just like, let's get to know our characters. That's a big thing for me. I have I did improv for a while. And so, and at the root of a lot of improv comedy is kind of understanding your characters, and then everything else just kind of goes with it. So I'm big on that, writing out bios. One of the my favorite parts of working on Black Friday was working with the actors to kind of flesh out their understanding of the characters. That's a total side note, but like, Steven decided that Brian wanted to be a dentist. Ivana at some point was like, I've always understood that Marnie has a younger sister at home. And I was like, what does that mean? And she was like, all of her motivation, the reason she's trying to get out, there's a younger sister. And I was like, that's – so just to kind of dive deeper, but I think that's for a while and kind of talking to her. And the reason they were able to make these creative decisions was because, like, for a while, I had that notebook with me on set, and I was able to say, well, my understanding of Marnie is kind of X, Y, and Z, right? Here was her plan. She was going to work here for 6 months, but she's been here for 3 months. And some of this might get said, some of it won't. So I'm a big journaler, just kind of getting the thoughts out, getting the bones out. Then, then I kind of just start to outline it and keep, I'm always kind of trying to keep my finger on the pulse of my enthusiasm about an idea, because I personally feel like you could watch a horror movie and tell if the creator was enthusiastic about it. And I don't, I never want to be in a place where I'm just writing something because I'm like, yeah, haunted house movies are big right now. I got to get, you know, and so I want to still be scared of it. I want to be excited by it. And then,
well, and right when the moment hits when you realize haunted house movies are so big right now is the last time you want to start writing it, because it's already inundated with haunted house movies. And by the time you're finished, it's going to be on to something else already.
Right. I mean, and I was doing Black Friday, the Black Friday zombie thing for a while. I was told it was a dumb idea and that it was stupid. And then we even started filming it. When we started filming, it was at a time when they started going, hey, retail workers are essential workers. You got to get outside, even though there's this really infectious disease out. And so it's like we kind of stumbled into being timely, I guess. So it's like I would always, if anybody listening is an aspiring writer, I try not to pay attention to trends. Because like you said, it's like you finally get that. Yeah. I said it on another interview somewhere, but like – 8 years ago, it was all Uber scripts. If you could do like a rideshare horror or comedy, but like rideshares are really big, apps are really big. And so just stick to what you find scary. And then, and my other writing, because the first I hit the end, and I know a lot of writers like to go the end, and they push the computer away, and they're just, it's exciting because you've finished your work, but it's just getting started, right? And so you immediately go, okay, now we got to junk it. Now I got to gut the house again. And so a big part of my process is understanding that I'm wrong and I can't be wrong. And yeah, it's all dry erase. Everything I do, all my notes are in pencil, all my documents are easily deletable, because I just have gotten very comfortable with like wholesale ripping out chunks of the script. This character doesn't work. In the weeks leading up to Black Friday filming, we were ripping, we were going just entire character decisions, because it's just like, we don't know if this works, or we don't know if they'll be able to kind of do this. So up until the last minute, I am writing. I wrote Marshmallow up until the day of the writer's strike, when I got a call from the producer who was like, you got to like essentially send your best and final, which is very strange, because usually you could kind of tweak it throughout filming. But so I'm a big outliner to get every minute thought down. And then I will always do what I call like I do a personal theft, right? So it's I'll now start to write out the story that I understand while always kind of revisiting the little notes, because then that's how like dumb jokes come up. I don't know, like just in my understanding of these characters, like a lot of my favorite scene in Black Friday is where they're sitting around in the warehouse, kind of just talking about how they all got here, and it's like that came from just understanding the world and these characters before I understood the story. Because I was very ready, and something I think all writers need to be ready for in producing their work is for things to change. I had a whole set piece written about a ladder on the outside of the toy store, the ladder that led up to the roof on the outside of the toy store, and we just didn't have one, and we couldn't build one that they could safely climb up. And so it's like, okay, we just have to pivot. And I'm very flexible with that, because it's like, well, as long as we're staying true to the characters we're creating here, like that. Yeah. I don't know if I answered your question right, but I,
it's good. That's
good. It was all over the place.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being with us and for joining us this week. And it was fantastic. We'd love to have you again sometime. So
I would love to
be back when you get closer to Marshmallow.
Oh, for sure.
Absolutely. I would gladly hit you guys up. I would love to be back. I had a wonderful time.
Wonderful.
Great.
Good. Us Midwesterners got to stick together.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. So, well, the next episode was going to be Mark's pick, and so I don't think
Mark, we have to pivot.
Yeah, we have to pivot. I do have, I did have a pick here locked up. The one that I was going to use for mine, which would have been later, is going to be related to. I thought it would be a good time to do some vampire movies, since Nosferatu is coming out on December 25th. So my episode was going to be right before that. So. It's too early to do that. So I thought, let's look at some creature features. And there's one movie I'd love to revisit. We're not going to do that. Or yes, we are. Yeah, there's one movie that I would love to revisit. I'm giving Joe a Christmas gift. That's right. I forgot. So the first movie is The Host. And I haven't seen this one. It's Bong Joon-ho's 2006. It's a Korean movie, and it is on Hulu or Canopy.
Loved it. Can't wait to watch it again.
Yeah, I haven't seen this one, so I'm looking forward to it. And that is The Host from 2006. The next one, and sorry, Joe, this is going to hurt you, but it is Ginger Snaps.
No, I haven't seen it, but it's one of the ones that I'd be willing to see.
Okay.
Because I've heard good things about it.
Yeah, and this one is a werewolf movie, and I've heard good things. I actually have only seen parts of it. I've never seen the whole thing all the way through. It's on Peacock, and it's on Shudder. And but Joe, since I did do a werewolf movie, and Andy, Joe's he's not a fan of werewolves. So if you could write a good werewolf movie,
challenge accepted. Yeah.
But my early Christmas gift, my early Christmas gift to Joe for a creature feature movie is to play Birdemic. Shock and Terror from 2010. Okay. James Newman directed.
Wow, Christmas came early.
It did come early. So this is one of Joe. This one is near and dear to Joe's heart. I've never actually watched Birdemic, so I'm going to
treat.
Oh, you're in for yeah.
Yeah. So this one is on Amazon Prime, Peacock, Hoopla. It's actually on a ton of shit. It's on Tubi. It's on Plex. It's on Pluto. It's on a bunch of stuff. You should have no part. You could throw a dart at your television and hit an app that is playing it. So that's it.
I think there's even like a Riff Tracks version.
Oh, is there? Oh, yeah. I can't watch those for the first time I watch something. But The Host, Ginger Snaps, and Birdemic.
Wonderful. Yeah, Andy, if you could do a found footage werewolf movie,
yes,
it would hit both of the things that I cannot stand.
Yeah.
Here we go.
If you could make me like that, that would be a miracle.
I'm gonna make it.
Yeah,
and it's gonna be called. The movie will be called For Joe.
For Joe. Yeah. Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah, I'm honored. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess go to www.cinescarehorror.com. Check out our merchandise. What, Joe?
In addition to that, make sure if you haven't seen it yet, go watch Black Friday.
Yes.
Because it's on Amazon Prime.
Yes.
And some of their other offshoots. I heard, was it Freevee that they've decided to cancel? They're no longer going to offer Freevee. Yeah, that sucks. So while you still can, you can watch it on Freevee. If you can't watch it on Amazon Prime, and it's perfect timing because when this episode comes out, it'll be Friday, November 22nd, something like that. And it's just a week before the actual Black Friday.
Yep.
You should make this like a holiday tradition on Thanksgiving night. Watch Black Friday.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. This could be a Thanksgiving tradition of horror, to watch Black Friday for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Easily. Yeah.
Wow. Thank you guys so much.
Oh, of course.
Thank you very much for being on the show.
Absolutely. Yeah. I look forward to coming back. Like I said, you guys are awesome.
Great.
All right. Glad to hear it.
So I guess that's it. We'll see you next time.
Good night, everybody.
See anything you like?
Have you all got amnesia? They just cheated us.
They're coming. Get you, Barbara.
We've got a death curse.
There's a shark.
Little pig. Let's come in.
Sometimes.
What was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil.
I'm just gonna bash your brains.
This is
wow, Christmas came early.